23-1254, United States versus Ryan Thomas Ely. And we will hear first from Ms. Torrey. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Lauren Torrey on behalf of Mr. Ryan Ely. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, and I will do my best to watch my time. Remand for resentencing is appropriate in this case for multiple reasons. Here, the government agrees to remand for Montoya and Nishida errors. So given that, I would like to focus on the special conditions that are disputed and the substantively unreasonable supervision term.
I know under Ninth Circuit that's already settled, but I'm kind of curious about this. So the district court failed to articulate all the standard conditions at sentencing, and so the allegation is that violates the defendant's due process rights. But in the pre-sentence report, all those standard conditions are reiterated in there. So doesn't that defendant have notice of what may be imposed and has an opportunity to object? I'm just having trouble understanding this.
That's what I said in my dissent in Montoya.
Thank you, Judge. I should have read your dissent.
So not in this case, Your Honor. In this case, the PSR does not list the standard conditions for review or consideration. It simply says standard conditions. It does not provide the exact language for which ones the court intended or that probation was recommending. So here we don't have proper notice as to which of those standard, if not all. So here, under Montoya, it's appropriate for remand, as the government agrees in this case. And I also wanted to address Your Honor's question from previous arguments as to this issue about prematurely addressing conditions of release. Under United States versus Gross, the illegality is not a proper grounds for modification. So here we need to raise these the fact that these conditions are unconstitutional here on direct appeal. Later modification may be appropriate for other reasons, but when we're raising the specific challenges that they're vague or overbroad, we need to do that here before Your Honors. So as to the special conditions of supervision, Mr. Ely challenged multiple, but the government only disputes two. Those are special conditions 14 and special condition 16, both of which involve computer monitoring. Turning
well,
first.
I would like to ask about the condition about appeal versus collateral challenge and the use of materials. And I understand in this case, the government up front acquiesced that needs to be changed. But explain to me, what are the materials that he would need to have for a collateral challenge that require a carve-out from that condition? Because in the prior case, the language was so broad that it would reach statutes and case law. That isn't the case here. So what is it? What's the factual basis for asking for a carve-out for that?
Here, Your Honor, there's a concern that there might be a need to review, for example, even evidence for a habeas petition or something of that nature.
He is entitled to have and review his stash of child pornography, that needs to be carved out of his supervised release conditions. Do we allow drug defendants who are under conditions not to use drugs, do we have a carve out because they might want to test the drugs for a collateral challenge?
No, Your Honor.
So it's contraband. He's not allowed to have child pornography. I don't understand. You have no factual basis to suggest that he needs to review that in order to bring a collateral challenge. That's the only thing that condition would bar him. I don't see how it's overbroad. Whether the government conceded or not, it's not overbroad. Explain, what am I missing?
And a collateral attack could happen at any time, right? So he'd be able to keep this stuff for decades.
I'm not aware as to how that would work exactly, Your Honor. But here in this case, I think there's also a concern about when we're talking about the breadth of the special condition here, and whether or not he can review even descriptions. And so that would be something as simple as his pre-sentence investigation report.
This isn't like the prior case. It doesn't cover just descriptions.
Here we have viewing any visual depiction or other means of sexually explicit conduct involving children or actual sexually explicit conduct involving adults. And so it's possible that that conduct or its descriptions could fall within that language, but this condition is also problematic for another reason that the government does not address, which is that it does not match the oral pronouncement that was made at sentencing. There, the court stated these restrictions would not apply to materials necessary for any future legal challenges or for sex offender treatment. And so we'd argue that any future legal challenges is somewhat broader than the language provided here, which is for any future appeals. For that reason, remand is also appropriate. And
well,
if there's any...
going back to read the list anyway, so I'm not sure that the language discrepancy is such a concern. I think the substantive concern that Judge Collins has raised is one that you're probably caught unprepared on because that wasn't identified as something the government was contesting in this case. But I'd still be interested in your thoughts about exactly how it is that your client needs access to the material in order to bring a collateral challenge. I am as mystified as my colleague. Why does he need the porn to be able to present a legal challenge? I mean, it's not like he's going to successfully argue or even try to argue, oh, it's not really pornography. That's not going to be the subject of a legal challenge, collateral challenge. So what is?
And so I can't speak to what the arguments would be in the collateral challenge, apart from the fact that this language about sexually explicit conduct could be read broadly to include anything that would describe these images. And for example,
the qualifier, though, you must not view or possess any visual depiction or any photograph. I mean, all that language at the front, that precatory language seems to limit it to just the actual porn, not the PSR, for example.
And, Your Honor, it's, again, in this case, while that, even if we take it from the perspective of he's not permitted to have this for the purposes of collateral attack and that it doesn't extend to any other documentation or things that he might need to review for preparing a collateral attack, we still have this discrepancy in the language that was provided. So here, the district court is going to need to amend this language to either match its oral pronouncement or somehow further explain what is permitted when putting together a collateral attack. And this court's case law in COPE is very clear on that, which is that he has a right to this materials necessary to preparing that. And unfortunately, I don't do collateral attack petitions myself, but it would be my understanding that this is something that is at least as written to...
Well, even on direct appeal, I mean, there is a distinction. I understand that, and I understand you're not in a great position to talk about it, and I understand we're bound by COPE, but I'm having trouble conceptually understanding how his ability to protect his rights via collateral attack or appeal would be inhibited by his inability to actually have access to the pictures. What kind of argument is going to be made that's going to require access to his stash? It's already been defined as pornography. That's a factual challenge.
Again, Your Honor, I think that there is this language in here that could be up for interpretation as to again, what he can review in preparing that, which is problematic.
Well, should we give some direction to the district court below? I mean, I don't want to give signals saying you've got to allow him to have stash. Is that what your client's insisting upon? Or are you just wanting to have this academic exercise done to clean up language? What does your client want?
To ensure that these conditions are not overbroad and that the probation officer can make sure that he is in compliance, but in a way that makes sense to him, that he's on notice as to what.
But does he want his child pornography?
No, not in those words, Your Honor, no. But we want to make sure this is consistent with the court's precedent. And here, we provided in the 28J letter, a United States versus Benevento, this is helpful. It's a roadmap for this court. There was a similar porn prohibition condition. The court's language that it provided for the district court on remand was that it should vacate and remand for the district court to amend the condition to address this deficiency, and that because it exempted materials necessary to and used for any future appeals for sex offender treatment. So I think that language is what another panel has provided that would be appropriate in this case so that we can make sure that this condition aligns with what COPE intends.
And we've taken up a lot of your time on this issue, and it was an issue the government conceded. So I'm going to give you 2 minutes for rebuttal, but I'm also going to give you time to address the computer and monitoring issues, which is what you wanted to start with. So why don't you address that, please?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'll do that briefly. So here, Special Condition 14 is vague and overbroad because it provides blanket language that computer monitoring should be installed. Here, this court's case law, United States versus Sales and United States versus Quinzon, are clear that blanket monitoring is improper. There needs to be some sort of limitation as to the kind or degree of monitoring permitted. And because that doesn't exist within this language, it needs to be remanded so that the district court can further explain, again, the kinds and degrees of monitoring.
Why isn't it clear from the context of the language that the computer monitoring that is being referenced refers to monitoring for the types of things that are discussed earlier in the sentence, which is visual depictions of sexually explicit conduct involving children?
So this language that appears at the beginning of Special Condition 14 is addressing what kind of devices and that this monitoring software is to be installed on.
If the device can do this, which we're concerned about and which we have an earlier prohibition you can't do, if the device can access this kind of material, which you're not allowed to have, it needs to have monitoring. Isn't the logical reading of that that the monitoring is to see whether it can, because it has the capacity to get the forbidden material, the monitoring is to look for the forbidden material? It seems built in already.
That's what 16 actually says. It says it starts with to ensure compliance with the computer monitoring condition, which is 14. And then 14 limits this all to visual depictions, sexually explicit conduct, all defined under 18 U.S.C. 2256 and 2257. You read the two in tandem, don't you?
And it says these searches shall be conducted for the purpose of determining whether the computer contains any prohibited data and to determine whether there have been attempts to modify it. It seems to tie into the thing that the conditions say is forbidden.
So I disagree, Your Honors. If we look at Special Condition 14, it's saying that these are defining what the computers can do and what they're capable of storing. But when we look at Quinzon is helpful because it describes all the different types of monitoring software that were available, at least at the time that the court issued that decision. There it describes that blanket monitoring software is overbroad because it could be it could track every use, the entire activity of cell phones, computer usage, and in instances, some monitoring software takes snapshots of computer use every second of use. And so here that would be overly intrusive. We need something in Special Condition 14 that somehow limits that monitoring software to the degree and kind. In Quinzon, it was something such as internet activity. And here, turning to Special Condition 16 and whether that also addresses Your Honor's concern, the government points to this prohibited data language, but that is only applied to the prohibited data prior to the installation of the monitoring software. So here I would submit that that doesn't extend to all the ways in which Special Condition 16 is being used. But also, Special Condition 16 cannot limit Special Condition 14 because 16 is used to ensure that the software is working properly. It's not telling us what the monitoring software is looking for or looking through. So I would submit that there needs to be a limitation as to where the software can search and what it's looking for. And so here, even if Your Honors read Special Condition 14 more narrowly than we do as to prohibited materials, there still needs to be a limit on where it can search for those prohibited materials, which in this court has already spoken as to that in United States versus Keen Zone and saying that internet-related activity would be appropriate, especially in a case such as this. And I'm well over my time, Your Honors, but I would just also note for the term of supervision here, the term of supervision was unreasonable because in this case, the district court found that it saw differences in this case in comparison to other child pornography cases, and that finding cannot be reconciled with the maximum term.
Okay. All right, thank you, Counsel. As I said, I'll give you your 2 minutes that you requested for rebuttal. All right, and we will hear now from Mr. Fenner.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Jim Fenner. I represent the United States of America. As defense counsel, appellate counsel, already conceded that the statute condition 10, 11, and 12, which government has agreed to remand, but the remand would be appropriate, even though in the reply brief, I think they had somehow asked for the court to strike those conditions, and the governor would submit that would be inappropriate.
So I have a question, and maybe it's more for your supervisors back in the office than it is for you, but we have 2 cases on calendar this morning, both of which are from your office, in which the government, in its red briefs on the exact same issue, took opposite positions. How is that possible?
I do believe that the other counsel have submitted a letter and have changed the government's position on that. I believe
based on an unpublished decision, and you might have gathered from the tenor of this, which we may not necessarily agree with. I don't understand how one U.S. attorney's office can submit 2 red briefs on the same issue and take inconsistent positions. That should not happen.
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying, but obviously, like I said, the government's position now is consistent. And the government obviously...
So you concede that he should have a carve-out to possess child pornography for purposes of a collateral challenge. That's the position of the government of the United States in this court.
Well, Your Honor, I believe the reason why we concede in this case is two-pronged. Obviously, we are bound by COPE. So that we
COPE, as I've explained to you, as I've explained in my questioning, COPE involved an overbroad condition where we said that it would reach statutes and case law about child pornography. That's the material we were referring to. The only material that he's prohibited by this condition is the child porn. Why is the government conceding that he has a right to possess child porn for purposes of a collateral challenge?
Well, the second reason why the government is conceding is because the language the district court has imposed already include carve-out for appeals. It will be making no. It will make no
sense.
So
if they put in an erroneous condition, they should keep going the whole way. And the appeal is over. I mean, this is the appeal. He didn't get the material for the appeal. So... But the government thinks he should get back his stash of child porn so that he can have it for future reference for a collateral challenge.
I don't agree with that's what the language says. The language says that the defendant, Mr. Eli, can have material for the purpose of appeal, and in this case, the government is conceding for a collateral challenge. So I say the probation officer.
The question is why. I mean, we are puzzled as to the carve out for collateral challenge. We understand that he may have to take the lead on that himself, unlike the appeal, perhaps. But why
visual material is something he needs to be given access to. We just don't understand. And it may be that your office has taken the path that it has based on its understanding of COPE, but we're still sitting here trying to figure out what's the real reason that a prisoner needs access to that and should be allowed to have it in prison.
Well, Your Honor, I obviously haven't been sitting there and listening to the question you posed to my opposing counsel, that I understand that's your concern. You may take a different approach than, say, Benevento or COPE. But in practice, I think your Honor's concern can be addressed in practice. For example, let's say the probation officer finds prohibited material on defendant's computer. It's allowed to ask the defendant, why do you have these items on your computer? And given the fact that special condition 10, which only carves out for the purpose of appeal and perhaps when we remand for collateral challenge, it is defendant's burden to show, I have these material because I need it for appeal or collateral challenge. If he can't do that, he's violated the condition. So it's not a blanket convention to allow him to have child porn for just because in case that I might need these for collateral challenge or appeals. He has to show to the probation officer he has them for that purpose because that's how the language of the condition is written. You are to possess these material for the purpose of appeal and or collateral challenge.
And if he accesses it every day or every hour because he has to be continuously working on his appeal. I mean, this is crazy.
I don't think that's the thing, right? I understand what your Honor's concerns are, but that's the underlying the rationale I'm proposing. I see very, very little reason why a petitioner, a defendant, will ever have this material, the visual depiction of sexual activities, for any purpose on appeal or collateral challenge. So I believe that in practice, when the probation officer does find that material on the defendant's computer, I believe 99.9% of the time, he can't justify it by saying that it is for appeal or collateral challenge because, like you said, I can't even see why you would have the visual material for appeal and collateral challenge. And I think the condition is, and I think under COPE and the government's position here is that we don't want the limit.
But if it's 99.9%, as you just said, then the condition is not overbroad. And if he later, some extraordinary turn of events, he actually does need the material for purposes of a collateral challenge. He can file for modification, and the court can appoint counsel, and counsel would review the materials to determine that. That's how this could be handled in an appropriate manner, but it's not an overbroad condition if it can't seemingly conceivably ever apply.
I understand, Your Honor, but we're bound by the language the district court has, in fact, imposing this case, and it did carve out future appeals, and the government's position is that if it carved out,
COPE itself points out why appeal is different from collateral challenge, because COPE said in an appeal you have counsel, and so everything can be filtered through counsel, whereas in a collateral challenge there's no right to counsel, and so in a collateral challenge you'll get it directly.
Well, to the extent that Your Honor believes that both the opposing counsel and the government is wrong here to remand, then Your Honor, this court is free to reject our argument and hold that the condition as written is constitutional, not overbroad, and uphold that particular condition here.
Do you want to address the other condition?
Yes, Your Honor. I want to focus on the computer. I'll be very brief on the computer monitoring, computer search condition, because Your Honors have already raised many of the points I want to address. Here, like I said, as the brief mentioned, that there are limitations that make some of the language that this court has held in the past as problematic, and those limitations cure those languages. One, the search and monitoring conditions are limited to prohibited data, in this case, which is child.
But your opposing counsel, particularly with respect to paragraph 16, makes a very good point, which is that there's only one use of the phrase prohibited data, and it's only with reference to checking whether there's prohibited data prior to the installation, and it otherwise not mentioned there. So why wouldn't, if this is going back for Montoya error anyway, why shouldn't this get tightened a little bit?
Your Honor, like you said before, the conditions, the two conditions are really related and should be read in context.
Right, it's, But then, but we see we're drawing inferences. If it's going back anyway, shouldn't this just, what's inferred from reading it in context, shouldn't it just be made more explicit?
Well, Your Honor, I do want to raise the fact that this, the review on these two conditions are for plain error. It is because of the fact that Mr. Eli did not raise this issue in the district court, which had he raised it, district court could have the opportunity to say, well, let me tighten up the language here a little bit. And he didn't. It's plain error. And to the fact that there might be ambiguity as to the language, that should be construed in district court's favor because the error must be plain. If it's ambiguous, it's obviously not plain. So that's one reason why I believe that the condition be upheld as opposed to being sent back for revision. And second, I don't agree with opposing counsel's argument here. She focused very much on the method of monitoring, because special condition 14 is the monitoring part to ensure that defendant doesn't obtain prohibited material. But in this case, defendant's wholesale prohibited from possessing pornography, period. To limit the monitoring to a certain method is just giving Mr. Eli a way to circumvent it. It doesn't matter whether he gets it from the internet. It doesn't matter if a friend gives him a USB drive containing child porn that he later puts on his computer. It doesn't matter if he goes to a public internet cafe, if they, such things still exist, to download pornography, so thereby circumvent the monitoring software, and then later on put that, what he downloaded onto his computer. And that's the problem here. The government believes you can't limit the method of monitoring because there are many, many ways in which Mr. Eli may obtain the material put on his device. To arbitrarily limit the method of monitoring is essentially giving Mr. Eli ways to evade the condition that he can't possess adult and child porn, period. We wouldn't, like Ayana brought up the very good point of comparing this case to drugs, we would not limit a probation officer's ability to find whether or not a defendant possessed drugs to the extent that he's prohibited from doing it. Why should we place that kind of limitation here when Mr. Eli has many, many ways obtaining prohibited data? So I don't agree with opposing counsel that somehow this court should carve out some kind of limitation as to the monitoring itself, given that Mr. Eli has many, many ways of obtaining the prohibited data. Moving up briefly, unless Your Honor have any more questions about these two conditions. Let me move briefly to the lifetime supervision. I still have 1 minute. First and foremost, the district court here.
There, you don't have 1 minute. You're in deficit.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I've been arguing here because we've taken up a lot of your time with questions.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Be brief.
The district court followed the Sentencing Commission's recommendation, which is that an offender who is convicted of possession of child pornography recommended supervision is lifetime. And this court in Apodaca essentially held that the Sentencing Commission's position on this is justified, given that they had reviewed plenty of data in the past and conclude that lifetime supervision may be required for these individuals, and held that in order to overcome that presumption, the defendant must provide conclusive or near-conclusive data that child pornography possessors are not risk, future risk to reoffend. And Mr. Eli has not provided that particular data that Alpadeca requires. And furthermore, there are other facts in this case that this court has relied on to show that defendant may be a future risk. For example, he admitted to the probation officer.
I think we understand your
argument. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. I do agree with the government that we need to look at the plain language of these special conditions. That's what the court states in United States versus Nishida. When we look at the plain language of these conditions, they are vague or overbroad for the reasons we raised in our briefing. And I agree with Your Honor that these could be tailored to be more explicit on remand, because as from our position, the prohibited data from Special Condition 16 does not limit Special Condition 14. And we disagree with the government in its argument that monitoring does not need to be limited in any way. That is inconsistent with both the United States versus Sales and the United States versus Quinzon. The court has stated that its case law has never approved monitoring in all of its forms. That comes directly from United States versus Quinzon. There needs to be some limitation. And here, when we look at the plain language, given that the sort of beginning piece of Special Condition 14, that does not explain the kinds or the degrees of monitoring permitted in this case, which is required by the district court. Additionally, Your Honors, we do not dispute that the supervision term was within the guideline range. However, the district court's findings don't justify the maximum term in this case, given the mitigation that was presented and its findings that this was different from other child pornography cases and that Mr. Ely was capable of rehabilitation. Unless Your Honors have any further questions.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case just argued will be submitted and the court will stand in recess for 10 minutes.
All rise. This court shall stand in recess for 10 minutes.